Welcome, dear congregants, Sarg. I'm granting ye the permission to board this worthy sea rover, piled high with booty like a spaghetti and all the fixins. Aye, 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 that's a spicy meatball. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
Thank you. I'm workshopping. And as you know, this weekend, the Story Center Daycare will be presenting its musical review of Pirates of the Caribbean 4 on Stranger Tides. No doubt, the finest of the pentology, my favorite one. Tickets are still on sale and purchase is mandatory if you're a congregant, so come join us at the Story's Louis Anderson Memorial Actors Theater for this remarkable $3 million production.
This weekend's review would not be possible without the generous donation of one of our congregants, Mark O, a sacred member of our Patreon's VIP Story Glory Guard over at patreon.com/tsmbt. While Mark won't be in attendance due to international travel restrictions, he asked us to read the following psalm in his name and dedicate today's story to an unexploded beached whale. The psalm. What is love but an excuse to torture, to continue the pain of the crotch's parents? Marrying for love is an arrogant idea. It is a fabrication of the will to spill new life from greasy hatches. And when it is done, the hate remains like a sip of acid, burning the soul. The story must be told. And to give you just a little extra zing, like a sprinkle of Parmesan on a mile-high plate of spaghetti, Sister Callista and the Tots Story Choir will give us a little preview of this weekend's show after we get real damn and greasy with this here story. And, at no extra cost to you, dear congregant, we have a guest preacher.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
You love her. You know her. Plumping from coast to coast. Chaplain Jackie Zabrowski. Take it away, Chaplain Jackie.
From Boat Book, the book about boats. Written by A Jaunty Hat. A story titled, The Age of Wind Power, a brief history of the origins of the Empire's Second Industrial Revolution. A 100 years ago, a baleen whale swam up the Murkwater Canal and couldn't swim back out. It died there, crushing houseboats and shop skiffs, its song of terror still carrying on the wind. The only way to get it out was to carve it up. Barrels and barrels of innards were put to the torch. The fat burned bright and hot, but broke down slowly. The flames flickered through that night and the next, keeping the workers warm and well-lit through their grisly labor. The fat, they realized, was a potent fuel. Thus, the Industrial Revolution began. At least, that's what the brass placard beneath the engraving says. Admiral Nell Pankhurst drifts further into the exhibit, studying the wood cuttings and cross-hatchings, the yellowed pyramids of Scrimshaw. On this one, workers carve blubber from a carcass, so lifelike she can feel the cold weight in her own hands. In this one, a wild-eyed man is preaching at a crowd. The cult of the whaleless, reads the placard. A threat to our great industry. The other party guests bark with laughter by the buffet. The spread costs more than her whole crew makes in a year. The sounds of teeth grinding and chewing overwhelm the string quartet. Her bones ache. Every slow breath is perfumed with clusters of roses. But this exhibit hall is adjacent to the largest whale oil refinery in the Empire. The flowers do nothing to hide the stench of boiled fat and sea brine. Smell never used to bother her. Now it burrows into her nostrils, burns her sinuses.
How could I have ever stood it? How could I have not known?
Admiral!
Nell turns to find one of the score of the unspeakably rich whaling barons at her side. This one is half Nell's age and twice as soft, all pinstripes and gold buckles, an expensive cigar clamped in his teeth.
"Day has finally come," he says, raising his champagne glass in a toast.
Nell indulges him. She can feel the glasses ting in her molars.
"The last end of season function before the great Nell Pankhurst retirement. I read the piece about you in the journal. To think, you almost didn't make it."
Nell smiles tightly. She can smell the alcohol on his breath.
"A near thing."
He grins at her and beckons her close, like a little boy with a secret.
"So tell me, what's it like to drown?"
The sensations return, cold water pouring down her throat, filling her lungs. The inhuman song that escaped her mouth when she tried to scream. The twisting of her bones. Nell says,
"Count yourself lucky you'll never find out."
He laughs and drains his drink around his cigar. A thought brightens his face.
"Say, didn't your mother drown?"
Nell itches to push the detonator in her pocket right then. She forces herself to respond through gritted teeth.
"Yes, it was a long time ago."
"Now that'd be something,"
he slurs.
"The same fate claiming two admirals? Shame you didn't return with the whale you were chasing."
He bites his cigar in fervor.
"One final fuck you to those damnable whalists. Shills for the wind industry. The lot of them."
He laughs and smacks Nell hard on the back, and her heart stops. 20 pounds of flat-packed explosive ammunition are layered against the inside of her dress uniform, inches from his drunken strike. She waits for the blast, half hopes for it. When the explosion doesn't come, her heart begins pounding once more. She shoves the Baron away, harder than she means to. He falls to the floor and champagne spills across the pale marble tiles. Heads turn. Startled gasps interrupt the string quartet.
"How dare you?"
the Baron shouts.
"I should have known you'd be just as cold as your mother."
Oliver enters the fray, dressed as a servant.
"Oh, goodness, let me help you."
He levers the Baron back to his feet and dusts off his pinstripes.
"You lost your balance is all. Isn't that right, Admiral?"
"Yes, of course."
Nell feels dazed under so many inquisitive eyes.
"Let's get you a fresh drink, yes?"
Oliver says, waving for another servant to attend the man. The Baron leaves them, shaking his head.
"Keep together just a little longer. It's almost time."
Nell nods. Around her champagne flute, her fingers begin to prickle with numbness.
"I'll be ready."
Torrential rain drummed into Nell's eyes, but she didn't dare close them for long. Her target was in sight. The long black spine arched out of the water, wrinkled and spotted with age. The oil would be rich, the blood fragrant. Nell was high on the hunt. She had fired 3 harpoons already. Tricky, this one. She would not return from the final hunt of her career without a kill. The Leviathan turned, swimming against the crashing waves of a gray, furious sea.
"Follow her!"
she screamed. Nell's first officer turned the ship sideways along a wave. Most of the crew braced themselves. When the ship pitched, Nell was too busy sighting down the harpoon. She didn't even hit the rail. One moment she was on her feet, fingertips tightening on the triggers. Then she was underwater. Despite decades at sea, the water terrified her then. The cold knifed into her joints. Icy saltwater brine filled her mouth as she sank into the dark, Fighting panic, Nell clawed out of her greatcoat and kicked for the surface. Except the bubbles that streamed slower and slower from her mouth and nose, they were drifting down her body. She was swimming deeper. She gasped. The sea rushed in and in. Nell sank. Drowning did not feel how she had imagined. There was no shock of pain, no agony. It was almost peaceful. The screaming instinct to kick for the surface felt like a memory. The pressure in her ears faded.
Did my mother feel the same?
She closed her eyes and waited to die, to lose consciousness at least. Instead, her whole body began to prickle with a strange numbness. She opened her eyes. She could see again, even in the dark, but not straight ahead. Straight ahead was just nothing, a peripheral blankness. Her eyes gazed from both the left and right sides of her head, the ideal angle to watch in helpless shock as her numb hands elongated, fingers fusing together, the fine bones within strengthening, skin racing out to cover them, darkening to blades of bruised gray. She thrashed against what she saw, what she felt, willing it to stop.
What is happening?
Panic surged up her throat again, fighting past the seawater. She tried to scream, but what emerged was deep and booming, a melodic cry that sliced through the dark. Her ankles swiveled outward, her legs fused together, forming something like a tail. And when she kicked, she found herself looking into a great eye the size of a helm. A long, light trench of a scar streaked over the whale's eyes like a surprised brow. Nell stopped thrashing, too astonished to do anything but stare. Here, in the grasp of what must be an oxygen-deprived hallucination, she thought of the day her mother came home with stitches from brow to temple. Admiral Celia Pankhurst had been thrown against a bulkhead in pursuit of a 30-meter Leviathan. Split her skull open, but even pouring blood, she harpooned the damn thing and hauled its carcass aboard. The wound left a pink scar like an extra eyebrow, an eternal look of surprise above Celia's hazel eyes. This whale's eye wasn't black. It was hazel. Whale song pierced the sea around her, deep and haunting, with an upward twist almost like a question. Nell had no answer. The eye dipped, and the great black head was beneath her, lifting her. Water rushed by, poured by, gray light reaching her eyes, facing frontwards once more. Nell's crew hauled her back onto the deck. The storm had calmed. The ship sat upright on choppy but level waters. Water poured off of Nell as she coughed and vomited and gasped. She watched her ice-white hands clench and unclench against the cold iron deck, her sopping wet clothes clinging to her. Each of her fingers was separate, flexible. Her legs were independent and bent, her knees starting to bruise from how hard she collapsed.
"We can pursue,"
her first officer said, helping Nell to her feet.
"You get below and into something warm and we'll give chase."
"No,"
said Nell, without even thinking. It was the strangest notion.
"I won't let them butcher my mother."
It was a hallucination. It was the last gasp of her dying brain. Nothing more than chemical signals and hypothermia. By day, this is what Nell told herself as she got her retirement in order, filling out her last desk loads of paperwork, meeting with officers and attorneys to hand over her ship and her crew. By night, logic failed her. Every time she closed her eyes, her dreams brought her back. Her fingers braided together, arms stiff and graying, Panic overwhelmed her as her vision divided, left stretching from right with blankness at the center. And she'd wake in her bed, soaked with sweat as though she had drowned once more. Nell was walking into town to meet with her attorneys one morning when she passed a whale cultist, disheveled, unbathed, anti-industrial literature in hand. She'd never listened to their senseless rambling before. This time, the words seemed to follow her.
"Look in their eyes,"
the cultist shouted.
"They're us, lost at sea, never to return until the hunters bring them in. You can see their humanity even as they're butchered, as the black smoke of their burning poisons our eyes. But it doesn't have to be like that. Not with the wind at our disposal. Clean power. Not a single beast harmed."
Hell didn't realize she'd stopped to stare until the cultist smiled at her.
"Pankhurst! You know it too. You must have seen them when you went overboard."
Nell hurried past without taking a pamphlet. The nightmares didn't stop. Nell kept waking with the sense that her bones were out of alignment. Horrifying moments where her eyes split focus, saw impossible angles. Logically, it couldn't be real. But it always felt real, right up until she woke. The fifth time it happened, Nell dreamed her knees were dissolving, the bones stretching and stretching. Her legs melded into a heavy tail fin as she thrashed in panic, crushing the end of her bed frame. When she woke, her knees were separate, her bones the proper length. But when she'd gone to bed the night before, the bedposts were still attached to her bed. Nell stared at the pulped footboard. One bedpost had been flung with such force that it put a hole in the drywall on the other side of the room. A numb prickle started at her toes and ran up her spine like a cold finger. Her hands shook as she threw on clothes. She didn't realize she'd forgotten socks until she emerged into the morning streets. Her eyes scanned the square.
"Where are you?"
she muttered.
"Damn it! One time I need you."
She finally found a whalist in the market. The woman held out pamphlets, calling out to people barely awake enough to collect their wares from the market stalls.
"They're what we become. They are us. Every lantern, every engine, every great ship burns with fuel harvested from people as real as you and..." "Hey!"
The whalist yelped when Nell seized her by the collar. Her pamphlets scattered, her eyes wide with shock, then recognition.
"What the hell do you mean? They are us?"
Nell demanded.
There's evidence."
"Show me."
The woman held up the last pamphlet in her grip. Nell ignored the stares they were starting to garner.
"Not the goddamn pamphlet. How do you know people turn into..."
She lowered her voice.
"How do you know?"
The cultist's eyes widened further.
"You've seen it too."
Nell released her so fast that she stumbled.
"I never said..."
"Come with me."
The woman led Nell to a street of shops near the river. It looked perfectly ordinary. No sign of the unhinged nonsense she'd come to associate with the cult. The whalist gestured Nell into an alley.
"Walk to the end and take the stairs to the bottom. Wait for him."
Nell followed the woman's direction and found herself inside a cramped office, lit only by the watery morning light pouring in through glass bricks set near the ceiling. Pamphlets and books littered every surface. Maps of the seas, overlapping and at all angles, were tacked to the walls. Beside them, Nell saw photographs of whales at sea, whales hanging in their slaughter frames, close-ups on their eyes. Sketches and photographs of people were tacked beside them. She inspected them one by one, fearing she might find her mother's face.
Who did you see?
Nell jumped at the sudden intrusion. The man standing in the doorway had the bronzed skin of someone from the Southern Isles, or perhaps the weather-beaten tan of someone who had spent a lifetime at sea. He was around her age, she thought, the long end of 50. But unlike her tidy graying bun, his wild hair was still inky black.
Excuse me?
Sorry. Too early in the day to remember my manners. I'm Oliver. I'd ask your name, but...
He smiled, crookedly charming.
I'm already familiar with your work, Admiral.
Nell's hands clenched in her pockets. Oliver began laughing.
I did not expect someone like you to ever step foot in my office. But then again, I heard about what happened on your last trip. A bit of drowning changes minds, among other things. So I'll ask again. Who did you see?
When she couldn't respond, Oliver took pity.
It was my dad, for me. He died in a tributary off the river when I was a boy. I took over his fishing skiff when I was old enough, Mussels, off the southern coast. One day, a pod of whales followed us. The one beside the ship.
He shook his head.
Most of us here have stories like that.
So is everyone who ever drowned?
Nell couldn't hide her horror.
Every whale is someone who drowned. Yeah.
Nell sank into a seat before the desk. Oliver poured her a whiskey.
It was dawn just 2 hours ago.
Nell protested.
You'll need it,
said Oliver.
Tell me why you're here.
She took the whiskey.
I saw my mother.
She could still see that great hazel eye.
She put me on her head. She brought me back to the surface. But before that, I...
Nell couldn't bring herself to say it. The way that pricking numbness began to change her.
You started transforming.
Nell choked on her whiskey. You too?
He nodded.
A couple weeks ago, a research trip for all this.
He gestured around the room.
Fell overboard, sank like a rock. The tail I sprouted. I got nearly 100 meters from the boat before a whale pushed me back to the surface.
He poured more whiskey for both of them.
A few more weeks and it'll change me completely.
Nell went still.
Are you getting the waking nightmares?
Nell pictured her decimated bedroom.
Yes.
The point of no return is coming. If you want to live through it, you'd best hope you can get out to sea before the change is permanent.
Nell remembered a news clipping she and her fellow recruits once laughed over. The prank too impossible to believe. Someone had dropped a whale on a house down near the docks. No one could figure out how they did it. They never found the body of the sailor it supposedly crushed. Everyone assumed they'd run off long before.
Excuse me,
she said, and hurried up the stairs, back into the alley. Nell spent the next few minutes vomiting into the alley behind the shop. The whiskey burned on its way back up. By the time she was done, the news didn't sound so bad.
So what?
She thought.
Was retirement really for me? Could I have survived a quiet life in the city?
She thought not. But the idea of spending the rest of her years beneath the waves, a transformation she couldn't control, she didn't want that either. Back inside, Oliver offered more whiskey. She held up a hand to refuse, stomach rolling.
You're taking it pretty well,
he said.
I was on the floor for a week.
What now?
Nell asked.
I can't just do nothing. Not after the damage I've done.
It's not your fault,
Oliver said, with far more gentleness than Nell thought she deserved.
You couldn't have known.
Couldn't I?
She looked away, frustrated.
When I was little, I could help our cook kill chickens without flinching. But when I caught my first whale, well, you know the tradition. I made the first cut.
She thought of the weight of that long, heavy blade in her fist.
Slicing into that leviathan. The way it looked at me. That eye wasn't empty and glassy like those chickens. It was practically begging for its life. But I saw that look in its eye, and I just ignored it. Killing a whale, it covers you in death. So tell me, how do I make up for that?
That depends. How much are you willing to do?
Nell thought of her decades of service, all the pods she decimated, the accolades she collected.
I want to undo it.
Oliver smiled.
And finally, the announcer declares, finishing her 40th and final year at the helm, Admiral Nell Pankhurst.
Nell takes the stage to accept her commendation, a handsome brass figurine of her ship set into a polished mahogany block, the placard engraved with her name and dates of service. Unsettlingly, it's the exact script and style as the placards in the exhibit hall. The trophy tucked into the crook of her arm, Nell shakes hands with the line of other admirals. Everyone in the room is on their feet, roaring with applause for her service for the Empire, for decades of slaughter. With every step, the explosives press against her ribs.
Excuse me,
she tells the barons who try to corner her once she steps off the stage.
I need some air.
Oliver meets her at the servants' entrance.
Nice timing,
he says.
We just got the last of the staff out of the building. You ready?
Just one more thing.
Nell drops her trophy in a nearby refuse bin. Oliver huffs a laugh.
Let's go.
They head down the back stairs, through the kitchens, into a subterranean service tunnel. With every step, the smell of the refinery grows more powerful, choking Nell. Oliver pauses at the bolt of an iron door.
This is it.
The refinery is dim and quiet. While the brass hosts its gala, they shut everything down. The stench is unbearable. Even with the open wall that faces the harbor, Nell has to cover her face with a kerchief.
All right,
says Oliver, unbuttoning his jacket. He's as laden with explosives as Nell.
The oil tanks are to the rear.
But Nell isn't looking to the rear. On the open harbor side of the refinery, the newest catches hang from the scaffolding on immense hooks. Today's catch was meager. Only 3 bodies for the next shift to butcher, boil, and refine. Nell's eyes are drawn to the black, wrinkled spine of an old whale. Pinpricks race sharply up and down her arms.
Nell!
Oliver says as she turns for the whales. She ignores him, darting across an iron walkway, past the young body of the first whale, to study the older one. Just above the whale's eye is a scarred pink trench, like a surprised brow. It's been weeks since Nell went overboard. Any number of whaling ships could have brought in the catch that got away from her crew, but seeing it here... Nell takes a few staggering steps forward, and reaches for the scar with a shaking hand. Her pale fingers are shadowed with gray, resting against the cracked skin.
Mama.
The whale's eyes open, and even in the dim light, she sees its hazel hue, feels it recognize her. Something further down the framework begins to clang and crash.
She's moving,
says Oliver, taking a bewildered step back to look. There isn't much movement this far up the frame, but that great eye sways gently with the scaffolding. The whale begins to sing, high and eerie, raising hairs on the back of Nell's neck. There's an almost muffled quality to it, so far from the water, but it sounds like solace. It sounds like relief.
You there!
Nell and Oliver turn toward the new voice. From the end of the walkway, a guard is coming toward them, flashlight aloft, a cudgel in his other hand.
The hell are you doing?
Barks the guard.
Get away from there!
Nell looks at Oliver, panic rising, but Oliver smiles. He turns toward the guard, hands out and placating,
Evening,
he says.
We must have taken a wrong turn.
What's she doing with that whale?
Nell's fingertips prickle, and she looks at her hands to find her fingers melting together. Her knees feel stiff and useless. The iron rungs groan beneath her. She needs to do this before her fingers are too stiff to press the detonator.
Whoa, whoa, hey,
says Oliver.
I don't think you want to.
What in the holy hell,
breathes the guard. And Nell looks up to find he's grabbed Oliver by the lapel, his coat hanging open to reveal the array of explosives.
Hey now,
says Oliver.
There's nothing you need to...
But the guard's silver whistle is already in his mouth, and the air fills with its frantic screeching high above the whale song.
Nell?
Oliver calls back to her.
I think you'd better do it.
Nell's clumsy fingers can barely pull the detonator free of her pocket.
I'm sorry,
Nell tells the giant eye.
I'm sorry I didn't understand earlier.
Shouts are cutting through the reeking air. The metal walkway beneath Nell's boots vibrates with the incoming guards. Nell cradles the detonator in both hands, which stretch even as she grasps it. The guards are getting closer. One decks Oliver with his cudgel, and Oliver drops to his knees on the grating, looking up at Nell.
Nell,
he says through his broken, bloody mouth. The guards are closing in, their cudgels raised at her now. One guard lifts a pistol, its chamber twitching as the hammer pulls back, her voice rising in horror.
What is she? What's happening to her?
Nell presses her face against the scar above her mother's eye and folds the detonator together in her hands. Her fins.
I'm sorry,
she whispers,
but I'm undoing it now.
The explosion tears through the refinery, gutting it, igniting the oil reserves beneath the service tunnel and ripping apart the exhibit hall. There, the roses disintegrate first, then delicate champagne flutes shatter, bubbles hissing as they evaporate. Flesh crisps and peels, fat sizzling and spitting like those first barrels of briny innards a century ago. Scrimshaw cracks and blackens, etchings melt to a blur. The Empire's first industrial age burns in one last fire from its prize commodity. In the morning, smoke still rises from the pitted black crater of the refinery that used to stand above the waterline. The former pinnacle of Empire engineering is nothing more than twisted metal and charred timber. Authorities are called in to sift through the wreckage, but cannot make sense of the remains. As best as the examiners can reckon, like the metal of the scaffolding, the fire warped the bones of the deceased. Littered among the bodies are skeletal pieces neither human nor whale, but something in between. Bones twisting into fins, vertebrae elongating down a spine from 2 inches to 2 feet in length. A human skull where the eyes have traveled far apart like ear holes. The papers that morning ask how the Empire can ever recover from the loss of their largest refinery, the beating heart of their industry. Without whaling, what will sustain them? The wind carries the smoke out to sea until nothing is left. The story must be told.
Thank you, Chaplain Jackie, thank you. That was a story true. And congregants, just as we promised, I'd like to bring out Sister Callista in the Tots Story Choir for a preview of this weekend's musical review of Pirates of the Caribbean 4 on Stranger Tides, no doubt the finest of the pentology.
Okay, Tots, just like we rehearsed. And Brandon, I swear to story, if you go flat on the G-sharp again, it's 2 weeks hard labor in the story quarry. Okay, Tots. And a one, and a two, and a three.
Caw, caw, goes the seagull. Clink, clink, goes the sword. Hump, hump, goes Jeffrey Rush. And the crew's all on board. Womp, womp, goes the
That was The Story Must Be Told, and the fountain was not made for cheese! Please check out our first book, Psalms 1, available at thestorymustbetold.com, but it's actually Amazon. Yuck, yuck. This was strictly a water and chocolate fountain. Who put in all the chatter? Who put in all the chatter? Over 70 psalms, including one called Daddy Fuckman. Ooh, what could it be? The wedding party has succumbed to cheese burns. They're worse than normal burns because that means cheese betrayed you. It betrayed all of us. Oh, and yeah, this book has gorgeous illustrations by congregant artist Sashir B. Yeah, check him out on social at Cadmium Coffee. Then hop on to thestorymustbetold.com. Buy it. Buy Psalms 1. The wedding has been annulled on grounds of skin burns. We'll see you in a couple weeks, but right now, the fountain people are here, and they're all, this violates the rental agreement. What's the deal with all the chatter?
The story must be told. This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.